welcome to another episode of GT Radio, and my name is Tino Magnetta. Tonight I have a very, very special guest. I have Mia Taranapa. She's the CEO of Comanche Nation Entertainment, and she is the only female CEO of a gaming company in Oklahoma State, and she is the first CEO of Comanche Nation. Mia, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you're welcome. Very, very welcome. So this for me is a very special show. And, you know, I've had a lot of women on the show, a lot of great women. And how does it feel to be in a position that you're in and to basically forge the way here and be the first, you know, break the glass ceiling, so to speak?
Well, I'm not going to lie. It's a little scary. It can be scary at times and exciting, but, you know, scary in the terms of, you know, we're Comanche Nation and we're really supporting our tribal members. And it's a big job, but, you know, you just do it and you look forward and you just keep figuring out how we're going to do it better and better.
Now, how did it all come about? The position and what made you want to do it? What inspired you to get involved and take on such a task?
The CEO or gaming?
The CEO position.
Well, I got a call one day, and it was from one of my cousins, and she said, "Hey, you just got appointed to be the CEO." And I just laughed, and I said, "Yeah, whatever." And she said, "No, I'm serious." So that's how I found out. And it was something that our tribal council needed, and we went from there. And again, it's one of those things that you're asked to do something, and you just do it.
Now, you make it sound so simple, but you've been around the gaming for a long time. Tell us a little bit of that evolution. Let's go back a little bit. And tell us a little bit of your experience with the tribe and your history in the gaming.
Sure. Well, I'm a tribal member. I'm a Comanche tribal member. My husband's a tribal member. My children are tribal members. I'll mention my mom for a second. She was our highest ranking elected official female in the early, you know, 1990s, early 90s. And when I was a child, I used to have to go with her to tribal council meetings. And so we would go to these tribal council meetings, and you know, I would kind of sit in the back, but I was, I guess, listening. I didn't think I was listening, but I was listening because I can remember, you know, now, I mean, some of the things that had happened and just kind of a history of gaming. But I got started in gaming. It's kind of funny. I have one of those. Moms that she. I had finished college. I attended the University of Oklahoma, so I'm a born and bred Sooner fan. But after I finished, I was kind of aimlessly wandering around, I guess. And I was just really at a point in my career where I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I have one of those moms that she knows what's best for you even more than you know what's best for you. And she had this great, she had this great idea that I should go work in this local casino. And it was for a different tribe, but I thought, whoa, like that was not my idea of a good time. I didn't hang out in casinos at the time. But she just kept on my case. And so the plan was that I got a job at this local casino, and I started as a cage cashier. And the plan was is that I was going to work for a few months, and then I was going to quit, and then I would tell my mom, okay, I did it. There, you know, will you leave me alone? Because that's kind of how me and my sister, we kind of get her off of our case by like, okay, we did it. So I started and I loved it. I absolutely loved it just from the first day that I started. It was something about the gaming floor, you know, the bells, the whistles, the people. I love people. I'm a people person. I love to talk, love customers, love team members. And if you're in gaming, there's just a feeling on the gaming floor that is hard to explain. It's just an energy. There's an energy about the gaming floor that's exciting. It gets you pumped up. And so I did that for a little bit, and then I transferred after a while and moved into casino accounting and did a little bit of casino accounting. And then I moved to Southwest Oklahoma and started working with the Comanche Nation. I initially started in the Gaming Commission and started as an internal auditor, and then I was a compliance auditor, and then I was the compliance director for about 10 years. So a lot of my gaming background is regulatory, and I really enjoyed that. And just, you know, ensuring that the nation adhered to our tribal and state and local laws and regulations. And then I made the transition to the operational side, and there was a position that came open. There was a new position, and it was training and development. And there was just something about that sounded really exciting. Like, wow, no, that sounds like fun. It was new, and so it was just something that we were starting to look into. And so I made the jump to the operational side and worked for a little bit and then transitioned to a property general manager and then transitioned to the CEO.
Now, you were telling me that one of the reasons why you were able to evolve, it was directly related to all the people that you were touching along the way. Explain that to me a little bit, because you have a lot of employees, right? And one of the keys to your success is the fact that you know everybody because of all your history with the tribe and the training. And explain all that to me. That's kind of like a puzzle thing.
Well, yeah, not everybody. I wish. I wish that were true. And that's definitely a goal, to be able to know everybody, because I think that's important. I think it's important that you do know your all of your team. And when I was in training and development, I taught a customer service class, and it was all of the new hires. So all of our team went through the class. I got to work with supervisors and managers and really got to know them a little bit more and, got to work with team members, but really got to sit down and get to know and learn their names and learn what they like to do for fun, a little bit about their family and their, you know, where they're from, and just to learn a little bit about everybody of all our new hires. And that was really cool. It was really, really cool, because when, you know, you transition to other positions, when I transitioned to the general manager of one of our properties, you know, I knew everybody. I knew their names. I knew what they liked. And again, I was in a new role, and they helped me by all means. It was all of our team.
When you started in the business back then, how do you think that the women's role in the workplace, in your workplace, has evolved since then?
Ooh, since I started, I would say that there seems to be more women in management positions. Our workforce is 60%, maybe 55, between 55 and 60% female. And now,
that's great. What do you
slowly,
think is the cause of that?
Slowly.
The shift. What do you think is? And you know, how can that be improved? What do you think is? What are those vibes that are happening?
Well, I think definitely there's a shift in our societal changes that, you know, where, you know, they're just it's. It's really uncommon that you come across anybody now that is a single, you know, income, you know, of a, you know, parents. It's hard, and so, you know, equally, you know, single mothers, they have to work. They don't have a choice. So it's, you know, there's that portion of it, and And then again, you know, just it takes two people to, you know, to work. And I'm a mother of five, so we have a big family. And I always joke and make a joke that I always tell my husband, if one of us had to quit, it's going to be him, because there's no way that I can stay home with kids all day. Like, I can't get out the door fast enough. And I'm like, whoa, wait, it's only time to go home, because it's another job. It's when the real job starts.
Yeah, it really is. Tell me something about the keys to your success. And you've been in so many different roles on your way up. Tell me some of those keys, the key ingredients that you need to make those that great evolution that you've made all the way to the top.
Wow, that's tough. I don't think that, you know, success isn't it's not a destination, it's a direction. And you know, you have to set goals for yourself. You have to write them down. For me, you have to write everything down. And you know, just being clear on what those goals are, and then to share them, you know, it really, because then now there's an accountability factor that I just told everybody, so now I have to do it. So, you know, sharing your goals, and then once you reach that goal, you have to go back to the drawing board. You have to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, you know, I've done these things. Now I have to set new ones. So, you know, when so you keep moving the goalpost per se. And so, I don't think that there's a key ingredient other than, you know, I truly believe that you have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in others, and you have to have a high expectation.
Yeah. You got to keep raising the bar higher and higher. Let's go back a little bit. You had touched briefly a little bit about your mom, and I know your mom is, and I had the pleasure of meeting her and meeting you too for the first time recently. And it's extraordinary. You were both extraordinary people. I wanted to ask you a little bit. She's been such an inspiration to you. Take me back to when you were a child and explain to me a little bit more some of the things that you experienced as a child that then, you know, transferred over into your adulthood and gave you the passion that you have today.
Sure. Well, I'm the youngest of four. So I have two older sisters and one brother. I was born in Venezuela. My dad worked in the oil field, and so he traveled internationally. When I was young, my dad was transferred to Nigeria, and so my parents just decided that probably wasn't the best place to live, so they moved home, and this is home for them. So Southwest Oklahoma is where both my parents grew up. And so we moved home back to Oklahoma. And then my mom, she, so my dad, you know, he was a sailor. And so, you know, like, you know, they say they have sailor mouths, and I can tell some funny stories, but my mom might hear, so I better not. But we can talk about those later. But he comes from a big family. My dad comes from a big family. He's one of 15. He has eight sisters and seven brothers. So he's pretty laid back. He's pretty liberal in his way of thinking. One thing I think he's always taught me is he doesn't care what other people think. And he's real clear about that. And so that was, you know, he's just one of those, those people. I think he also, you know, we pushed the limits together. When I was young, we broke horses together, and just, you know, I'd fall off and just look at him and he better get back on. So then I have my mom. I would say she's probably at the other end of the spectrum. Like complete opposite. You could get as far as you can on the other spectrum. And we call her the native version of Emily Post. So she She retired recently, and I think she's busier now than she ever was before. So, but she, even though she retired, she works with the University of Oklahoma, and she is works for the athletic department. She's their image coach, so she teaches athletes, well, all of the athletes. She teaches them just kind of life skills, but more image. And I guess just in short, you know, not to embarrass the university. So, and the national champ teams too. If any of the national champ teams, you know, they become national champions, they go through her class again, and she teaches them, you know, how they're going to act before they go to the White House. So she's certified in White House protocol.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, her teacher was the one that advised the president for many years.
Wow.
So yeah, her passion is etiquette, and she really has a special place in her heart. She really loves college age students. That's her favorite age, and she's really does a lot for the native kids and especially the ones that have attended the University of Oklahoma. She was advisor for many years to the native students, and so we would, my sisters and nieces, we grew up helping her teach classes, and you know, over time that stuff just sticks, and it's something that it's just like anything else that if you don't practice it over and over, you forget it. But it, you know, we were lucky enough to have her. But then there were some times that, you know, we would eat dinner at home and we'd have our elbows on the table and she would get on to us, or it was just, you know, we would tell her, Mom, can we just eat? Just eat
yeah.
Today.
Yeah, it became a bit like that. But she was also a trailblazer mm-hmm. in terms of a female in the Comanche Nation, right? She was the first, too.
She was. So in the early 80s, she was elected as the vice chair position, and she was known for a long time in the tribe as, you know, she had held the highest ranking female for about 20 years. And just until recently, you know, within the last, you know, few years, we have elected another vice chair lady.
It's amazing. What was it about your mom, and what is it about your mom that she was able to be the only female as a vice chair? What is it about her?
She's a people person. She's very, very giving. She does the right thing. She has a lot of integrity.
She's
I'm not sure.
Well,
you know, I was young when she, yeah, like when she held that position. You know, I don't know what she was thinking at the time. I don't know what would possess her to like do something, you know, like that.
That's funny.
But my, you know, I really feel my family is, you know, my mom and dad's family and my husband George's family. We come from big families, so all of us, you know, we have big families. But my mom's family it's primarily girls. It's you know, there's a handful of boys, but primarily it's girls. And my mom was the oldest, and you know, she kind of took care of her brothers and sisters, and my grandma worked, and she too was a pioneer and just making, I guess, positive change. You know, like what can we do as Native people, as women, as mothers, to, you know, make a better place, whether it be in the school system or, you know, whether it be at home or in our community or for our tribe. You know, what can we do to make it better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, positive.
All of them have been advocates for positive change.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, yeah. And that's where it all comes from. It starts from somewhere and just flows down.
Yeah, and I think it was an expectation. So.
an expectation of you to follow in that direction, correct?
Yeah, I think the girls definitely had higher expectations than the boys, for
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was just expected.
What's your advice?
You know, it was expected.
What is your? Yeah, it was expected. Hey, you got to do something that's, you know, that raises the bar in that area, and I think you blew it right out of the water. What is your advice to younger women coming up the ranks, you know, who are trying to do want to achieve the same sort of things that you've achieved?
Well, again, going back to the you have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in others, and have high expectations. You have to believe in yourself. You have to believe it. You have to think it. You have to say it over and over. You know, I'm a huge advocate for positive thinking, and you know, unfortunately, our world is such filled with negativity and everywhere we look, and so it's so important that you cut yourself off from that and really focus on what's important. In my life, I'm, you know, God's important, my family is important, and my career. And my mom always said, where there's a will, there's a way. And I live by that and believe it, because it's true. If you want it and you believe it, it will happen.
Yeah, you just have in you're just full of passion, just like your mom, and that's what pushes everything forward, is the hope.
Yeah,
drive.
And you have to dream.
Tell me a little.
You have to dream. Dream big. You know, always
yeah,
have dreams. Always have goals. You know, write them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, and never give up. I was a working mom. I had 5 kids and was working on a master's degree. You know, at the time, my husband worked, and he was also juggling a professional boxing career. So it was go, go, go. But one thing that is so critical is having a support system. And there was a time where we were going to move away, because that's what we needed to do in my husband's boxing career. But we really had to think hard about it, because we had little kids. And there was just no way that we could leave, you know, our family, because they have been such a huge asset and a tremendous support. And I'm talking our cousins and our sisters and our brothers and, you know, our parents. You know, there were times where we had 4 kids on 4 different baseball teams. So, you know, we can't be everywhere at one place. And George's dad is always taking somebody to practice and taking somebody to a ball game. And he knows their schedules better than I do.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big help when you have the family around.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes a
yeah,
big difference.
Yeah, so I encourage you, if you're a listener and you're a mom or your aunt, your grandma, you know, aunt, uncle, help those younger that are in school, that you know are in the early stages of their career. You know, a lot of times too, you know, if you don't ask, nobody knows. So just really being there is probably the number one thing that helped both George and I.
It's great. Now, tell me a little bit about the state of Oklahoma gaming. Where do you think we're at right now? Because a lot of people have said, you know, there's so many casinos, a lot of competition, a lot of expansion. I mean, is it too much? Is it just enough? I mean, where do you think we're at?
You know, 10 years ago, people asked the same question, and when Comanche started, we were the only ones in Southwest Oklahoma to have gaming. We were for many years, we're the only player in town. So you become very comfortable, and you know, again, when you're the only player in town. But then we got competition that came along, and I think competition's great, because it makes you better. You know, it makes you, you know, it's kind of it has gone back and forth. You know, they do something and then we do something, and competition kind of, you know, it makes both of the tribes, because we equally support our tribes and happy for them that are around us. They're our neighbors. We live in the same community. We're happy that they have what they have. Equally, they feel you know, the same about our tribe. We're happy for one another. I mean, we're all natives. But no, I think that Oklahoma, well, and nationally, you know, revenues keep growing. You know, they keep increasing. They keep growing.
Go ahead.
I think that, you know, they're still, you know, at construction. There's construction at multiple properties across, you know, the state. They keep growing. They keep expanding. New properties keep coming up. And I have yet to come across a casino that's closed.
Yeah, there seems to be enough business that it seems to support. Do you think there's any red flags within the next 10 years with the continuing growth?
I think that no matter what market you're in, you should be cautious. We were really lucky in Oklahoma to not have a housing market crash that happened years ago. We have had a state that was, you know, heavily dependent on oil. And I got the pleasure of meeting Mick Cornett, who was the former, I met him last week, and he was the former mayor of Oklahoma City. Just an incredible, amazing, amazing guy. I love hearing his story, best story. And he just came out with a new book. And but he was really one of the founding fathers that transformed Oklahoma City from, you know, a wheat field, and it was during the time of Oklahoma had an oil bust, and so it was, you know, devastating. And they transformed Oklahoma City to now downtown Oklahoma City is a tourist destination. I mean, I remember hanging out down there when it was a bunch of empty, vacant, abandoned warehouses. And today, you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder, you know, fast forward, and that's what they have now. And that, you know, they had a vision and they've made it a tourist destination. And I really think that that's kind of what's helped the tribes, because we followed in suit. There are many tribes across the state now that have major, you know, they're tourist destinations. I mean, who would have ever thought, you know, 30 years ago that Oklahoma would be a tourist destination? But, you know, millennials now, they're looking to leave metropolitan areas. Now, the ones that are going into the workforce, they're looking to leave some of those big metropolitan areas, and they're actually looking at coming to more rural places. They're looking at Oklahoma City. They're looking at Tulsa. They're looking at Iowa, places that are affordable and livable.
Right, yeah, they're looking at rural, not really anymore, because they, like you said, they've grown mm-hmm. into cities that have real culture now. So it's really good. Let's take a couple of calls, and then we can dive back into it. Hang on one sec.
Okay.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Mia?
Tino, this is Janie Dillard. I was going to call in to talk to Mia tonight, see how she's doing.
How are you, Janie?
Hi, Janie.
Hey, Mia, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, and congratulations. I'm so proud of you for what you're doing for your tribe, for the Comanche tribe, and what you're doing for the state of Oklahoma. It's phenomenal to see another strong woman being in the position that you're in, and that is phenomenal.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it. And I've told people this before, you know, you have always had great admiration and very much admire you, because you paved the way. You paved the way, and very known as, you know, when you think of women leaders in Oklahoma, you're the first person that comes into people's minds. And again, you're Choctaw, and you do it for your people and for the, you know, for the greater good. And when you do that, there's, you know, there's a purpose behind what we do.
Absolutely. It was awesome listening to your story and, you know, just how you're growing up with your mom, and your mom was so instrumental in everything your tribe did. I remember your mom. She was just such a lovely lady, and she's so instrumental in the tribes. And that's, you know, and you're following in those footsteps too. And Mia, just don't ever, ever lose your direction. Don't ever lose your big vision, because you've got it. And, you know where our tribes need to go. Just continue that push.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. And I just try to remember every day, you know, just looking at my family and my kids and just try to think, you know, seven generations, you know, what are we going to have, you know, and we have to think about that today. Because
absolutely.
This is what we're, you know, my kids and my grandkids, this is what they're going to inherit, what our tribe, what we're going to leave them. And again, you know, just trying to focus on, you know, we build roads and we build communities and we give,
yes,
you know, school supplies to the local schools. And but again, this is the community in which we all live in.
And that's what's so great about our communities. I mean, our tribes are so united right now with the state of Oklahoma, as Tino knows, everything we're going through with our compacts and this.
Yeah.
Our tribes are so united and they're so strong right
mm-hmm.
now. And we've got to keep that momentum.
Yes. Yeah, it's exciting. And
yes, it
and
is.
It's
scary.
And due time,
yeah.
too.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some exciting times We just need to see more and more of this stuff going on. It's a great, great thing that just all this stuff is happening.
It is, Tito, and I just appreciate you so much for what you do, highlighting the women that's in our, it's working in our tribes, and
mm-hmm.
and the strong women that's in our tribes, and just highlighting our tribes. And it's very
mm-hmm.
important that we continue to send that message every day. And I so appreciate your radio station. I appreciate your
mm-hmm.
your efforts too. It's phenomenal.
Oh, thank you. I wouldn't want it any other way. I think there's a lot of great women that are doing great things, and I think there's a lot of great
mm-hmm.
women in the wings that could do great things that just need
mm-hmm.
the opportunity to break through, and that's why we do it,
well,
you know, send the message out there.
Absolutely. Okay. Just like Mia. I mean, Mia, she stepped out. She took on more responsibility. She grew.
I got shoved out, Jamie.
Well, you did, but okay, maybe you needed that little shove, okay? Maybe you needed it.
You know, we get comfortable in our zones.
We do.
Mm-hmm.
So you needed that little nudge you got it, and look where you're at now, and look what you're going to do. Look at the opportunities you're going to have, and you know, don't keep those eyes. Keep those eyes on that position of where you
mm-hmm.
need to be, and you know, we all need to be. You've got to be. You just got to keep your eyes on those positions, because that's where you need to be. And you follow your direction and follow God's doors He opens for you.
Mm-hmm.
Just follow those, and you will not go wrong.
Well, thank you. And
yeah,
it wasn't until recently, Tino actually is the one that asked, you know, really kind of the first questions on, like, well, how does it feel? And it really was a tough question, because, you know, I never thought about it, really, honestly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't think that I've gone through any, if much, of my career in the gender card. I mean, it's just, there's a job to be done, and you just do it. You do it because it needs to be done. And whether you pick up a paintbrush, or you mix some concrete, or, you know, you drywall, and, you know, I recently just learned to weld. But you just do it. You do it because it needs to be done. And, my mom ingrained in us too that, hey, we live in an equal opportunity household, and
yeah.
I got four boys. And I ingrained that into them, you know, since the day they were born, that this is an equal opportunity household.
It is, absolutely. And you know, and you've got the right mindset, Mia. You've got the right mindset for it. I mean, you know, you just, there's the job, you just do it. You just do it. I mean, you don't wait for somebody else to do it, you just do it. So that's the right
yeah.
mindset to have.
Yeah. And plus, very inspirational for so many other women, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got to stay united. We've got to stay together. And, you know, we're all about
yeah.
our tribes. We're all about the betterment of our people. And we are our people's future. We are our – that's what we're at. Mia is the new our people's future. I mean, she's the one now will carry the torch. She'll lead it. She'll open up the doors. And, you know, our people – she will be the one our people follow now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a great thing.
That's that's what's exciting. That's what's exciting in our tribe. That's what is exciting, just seeing, you know, women move up into these positions. And I love it. Oh, I love it. She and I connected on LinkedIn, and you know, we've got to hook back up. We've got to sit down and talk sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
We want to do that, and it's something we've got to do. So we're going to make some time for that because I'm so proud.
Great. And I can say, looking back, you know, many years. I mean, really, you don't think of where you're going to go. You just keep going. And again, I think too, when you lose sight of why you're doing what you're doing, because it's for the better of the people to make a better life, and better, you know, better work.
Yes.
You know, better workplace, better everything. You know, you grow at the same time. So thank you. I appreciate all your kind words.
Yeah, no, you're so welcome, and I appreciate you so much. And Tino, again, appreciate you. Hope you both have a blessed evening, and it's been awesome listening to her whole interview. I loved it. It was great. So you guys have a blessed evening.
Thank you
so much for calling in. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, that was a treat.
Yeah, that sure was.
Yeah.
She's
a pretty amazing woman.
That's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
She's something else. I remember going to a conference and someone saying, oh, you know, they were shuffling in, oh, Janie's speaking today. And I'm going, what's all the fuss about? And then I heard her speak and I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. I mean, I felt so inspired after her speech. She's a great speaker.
Right.
And a great person.
And just what she's done for her tribe. And just seeing in the last 10 years and the growth that they've had. And, again, you know, the people want to work there. You know, they they've developed a great
place to
work.
They want
to
be part of her team,
Absolutely. And recently, too, there's been the new a new group called the United Women in Tribal Gaming, and that just really kind of started and then started with fire, because so many women started connecting, and initially I think we're going to start in Oklahoma and then kind of went on a national, just because so many participants have a can connect to working and you know, being a mother and you know, some of the struggles that may come with it. But it's a great group. So I heard Pam Shaw, Margaret Gray, and one of our former and council members as well, Ms. Navacoya, she served was one of our tribal leaders too. So just great, incredible leaders in our community that they came and did a speaking recently, and listening to them tell their story. I mean, I sat there and literally just about had tears in my eyes, because it's like, wow, you know, it's not just me. It's not just me that feels this way. And so that's where I really felt like, you know, making a connection with, you know, working in gaming and being all the things that come with it.
Yeah. Let's take another call here. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Mia?
Hey, Tino, it's Jack. Hey, Mia, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Jack, how are you?
Doing well. Hey, Tino, first I want to congratulate Mia, as everybody else has, and it is a great pleasure to work for such a fine woman in this gaming industry. So, I have a quick question.
That
I know you guys brushed up against it. I know that Tito brushed up against this Mia, but I think that Mia has a very kind of different approach to the saturation question of the market of Oklahoma. So I want her to talk about that one more time and how she's positioning Comanche Nation Entertainment to be competitive going forward.
Sure. So I have a little bit, I think that I do disagree with some people on the saturation, you know, the point of saturation, and my answer is always, well, no, I don't think it's saturated. I kind of did touch on it. You know, my definition of saturation is, you know, the break-even. When break-even occurs and when, Oklahoma hasn't reached its full potential of customers, and the demand of products isn't less than what supply is. So is that saturation point? No. There isn't a decline in sales and growth, or one isn't predicted at this point. Do we have to be prepared for that in the back of our minds? Absolutely. And as tribes, that's why it's so important that we have to diversify as well. But, you know, on a state level and a national level, revenue, it keeps growing. In 15 years, 16, it's more than doubled. And I know on a national, 2018, revenues overall of all the tribes in the U.S., grew by like 4%. And I think Oklahoma had the second highest growth of that. So again, we are expanding, we're building all the tribes. They're getting bigger and better, and they're adding more amenities and adding more attractions and water parks and being targeting families and place where, families can come, and there's something for everybody to do. So again, it's just the Oklahoma, kind of, I spoke a little bit about the Oklahoma City project and Oklahoma being a tourist destination. So that's my take on, two, I think we always have this fear of, if somebody comes along or if at that point, we've always had the fear, of course, that we're on the Oklahoma-Texas border, and, it's always, well, what are we going to do if Texas legalized gaming? Well, we start gaming in Texas. I mean, that's a big blue ocean. I think just having that mindset of, moving forward.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Tina, I think that Comanche Nation is positioned now with Mia at the helm to do even bigger and greater things than before. We have a true leader that stops and thinks, and like she says, she writes down everything. She has to see things more, but that optic is more of a written type of deal. But you really get a person who stops and contemplates and makes her decisions based on what she knows and the input of her team around her. And I think that's a successful recipe for a huge push forward from the Comanche Nation perspective.
And I think that's huge. I think collaborating, collaborating with your team is huge. It's vital
it's
for success
in
any business.
Mm-hmm.
Agree, 100% agree.
Yeah, it's a big thing. Great stuff.
Well, Tino, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate you reaching out to me and getting this to happen. Great show as always. Great person to have on the show with Mia, and I wish everybody the best of luck, and everybody have a great holiday.
Thanks
so much. Yep.
You got it, guys. Talk to you later.
Now we were talking a little bit about team building, and tell us how important that is.
I think it's just having a support system. It's vital. It's vital that everybody be on the same page and just have a vision and. And again, I think it's something too that like it's equally what I promote with our children that in their team sports, you have to do your part and you have to work together. You have to be in unison. You have to be or it falls apart. And that's whether it be Little League or sports or the team that you work with at work.
How do you go about assembling that team? Because it's difficult finding people that fit into the culture and to the way you want to do things, right?
Well, I don't think it's how I want to do things. It's the question always comes down to what's best for the tribe, what's best for the tribal members. And, you know, we're a tribe of, you know, a little over 17,000 members, and what's best for them. And that's the question that should always be. And you know, literally I love Post-it notes, so I have Post-its everywhere. And just, you know, I have a few quotes that are just hung up around, just kind of around. I had somebody come to my house once, and I'm like, well, what does that mean?
Like what? Can you mention a couple of them? Do you have them around you?
You want me to go around the house and read them? Well, one of my favorites is, and it's just because, you know, we all have a purpose here on life, and it surely isn't just to take a space. So somebody like, hey, you have a purpose, and it's not to just exist, but you have to live, and you have to have a purpose. And that one of my hangs in my bathroom, and I look at it, you know, every day multiple times is, you know, Romans 8:28, and it says all we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. So I really think, you know, just making sure that, you know, whatever work you're doing, you should love it. You should love what you do, because when you love what you do, it isn't work anymore. And, you know, I remind my team often that, like, hey, it's a choice. It's a choice whether or not you want to be here. Hey, I remind my kids of the same thing. You know, it's everything they do. It is a choice up to some point. But it, you know, it's mental, and so you have to love what you do. And but when you believe that there's a purpose behind what you're doing, then it's easy.
Yeah, then it's not work anymore. It just becomes part of your life, right?
Yeah, it's right. It is. It's you know, you're integrating, you know, everything that you do. And so, you know, I mean, for my children, you know, when I've, you know, went to work on, you know, on a holiday or Christmas or Thanksgiving or a night, you know, weekends or something, and they're like, where are you going? And I'm going to work. You know, they know that, you know, they have a direct stake in the outcome, and they know
right,
that they're
exactly.
little, and they know that they understand that they're
they
like,
know.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's working. She's doing her thing. You know, she's out there working it. Right.
And
yeah.
We're one of the few tribes that we do have what's called a per cap, which is a distribution to our tribal members. So a portion of our gaming revenue goes back to our tribal members. And we actually are right now, you know, just within the last few days, tribal members, well, tomorrow, because today's holiday, they'll actually receive theirs tomorrow. Some of them had started receiving them last Friday. But that's what, you know, so when you work at one of our properties and when you're a tribal member, you know, you have a direct stake in the outcome. You're a shareholder. You're a part owner. So we work in that you take pride as if you own this place, because they do.
Yeah, it becomes part of what inspires them to keep working at it and doing great things, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the key for the future of preserving Native nations? Do you think that the tribes need to diversify their interests rather than just stick to gaming? What do you think is the...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the purpose of Indian gaming was so that, you know, tribes could, you know, be self-sufficient and, you know, to provide, really to provide jobs, because tribes are in, you know, most tribes are in rural areas. And, you know, now, you know, they have started transforming. These rural areas are now becoming, you know, tourist destinations. And we, you know, we do have to preserve that, but we do have to look at other, we do have to look towards the future. And now that we've been in these businesses, our tribe's been in gaming since 1983, you know, 36 years. And so the tribe has, you know, some other companies, but you know, I really try to get my kids and I think brainwashing them early, like my mom brainwashed us really early, but to start thinking about those things, you know, like water and resources, and those are, you know, the things that we really, really need to be protecting. And again, no matter what you do, coming together and being united is key for any anything. So with tribes uniting and always being on the same page, it, you know, everybody wins. Everybody wins. The community, you know, again, we have a daycare that's not just open for tribal members, but for community. We build roads, bridges, houses. We have a transit system. We have an assisted living center for our elders. We have an elder center, a youth shelter, fire station, police station, recycling. I mean, there's so many things. We send our students to go to college, and the Comanche Nation is actually one of the has the highest per capita per member for college graduates. So again, these are things that our community is, and then again, the employment that tribes provide. I mean, think of the taxes and income tax that the state's getting in the communities. So the property taxes that when people are moving to these areas to work at these properties, you know, everybody wins.
Yeah, it's just perpetual, right?
Mm-hmm.
It feeds back into everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Feeds back into them. Yeah. Let's take some more calls here. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Mia?
Yes, my name is Rich. Hi, Mia. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. My question for you is, what do you think the strategy will be for getting millennials into the gaming properties? Or is that something that your tribe is concerned about?
Yeah, that's definitely huge, and I think it's going to be something that we really do need to focus on and think about. And you know, equally too, I know it's one thing we've been faced with as, you know, an employer is, you know, balancing the multi generations of workforce. I mean, we have now an 18-year-old and a 70-year-old doing the same position, and how you give them a message is not the same. Okay, when I get a hold of one of my sons, the only way that I'm effective to him is for me to send him a Snapchat. You know, get your clothes off of the bathroom floor. I'm serious. Like if I tell him, I could tell him, yell at him, scream at him, write it down, but it is only processes through his brain certain methods. And it is going to be interesting. And for so long, you know, the esports too, you know, really kind of focusing and you know, I think that somewhat to a degree that gaming has somewhat followed in the video gaming technology to a certain degree. And so I think it'll be really interesting, you know, watching how we move towards a more interactive type, because, you know, the esports now is huge. I mean, it's got more viewers than NFL, NBA, all the national leagues combined into one, you know, are more viewers watching somebody play video games at the Fortnite national tournament. So as a form of a discipline, I take my son's gaming system away from him. And then when I learned about, like, oh my gosh, did I just take his college scholarship away from him? Because, you know, if he had to go to football or wrestling practice or any other practice, like, he's going, whether he's in trouble or not, he is going to practice. And I might even tell his coach that he hasn't been listening to his mom. He needs to run a little bit extra. But, you know, but now I was thinking, oh my gosh, like, I've just taken his game. That might be his college scholarship, you know, into college, because now they have that available at many colleges, and it's growing. So also, you know, and not just how are we going to get millennials into the casinos, you know, how that world is going to change. You know, so workforce and how we're going to get those millennials in, because that's their world now. I mean, their world is online, and it's social media, and it's really interesting to study too. Another time, my son was got his game system. I came in the living room and I was like, "What are you doing?" He was watching somebody else play, and that was one of the first times that I ever kind of learned about, like, watch other people play video games. So, yeah, figuring out, you know, how we do that. But I also think that even though we get so sophisticated and we move into technological advances, I mean, we're still human at the core, and we still need other people, and we still have to make human connections. So there always has to be that human connection that, like, in our facilities, we're here to serve. But I do think we'll get more technological. We're going to see we'll see online gaming, and we'll see more of the esports develop, and more of the social interactive games. That's kind of what my thoughts. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I have two teenage daughters, 19 and 16, and I have to totally agree with you on the social media, and they're glued to their phones, you know, it seems like 24 hours a day. So, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, moving into that realm and, you know, like you said, watching video games, I've heard that before as well. So, yeah, you know, with esports and, you know, online gaming, definitely, you know, things will be changing. I think it's just, you know, an additional piece. You know, traditional gaming, I don't think will go away, but definitely, you know, with the online gaming, it'll just, I think, contribute, you know, to your property. So. Yeah, I mean, the other question would be, you know, I know you've worked your way up from all the way from, you know, being behind the, I guess it was the cashier all the way to the top. So I guess, you know, during that journey, is there any one particular project that you're, you know, particularly proud of that stands out? That you're, you know, and why would you be proud of that?
Gosh, there's probably a few. One memorable, probably one of the most memorable, in my career, was selected in 2011-12. To serve on the National Indian Gaming Commission and reviewed with, 14, 15 amazing people from across the U.S. and, you know, would sit in, in a room and talk about the laws and regulations. And it was just a group of really diverse people that were, you know, some of them were just such experts in their field. And let me pause there for a second. And so, when I first started in the Gaming Commission, it was new. We had just relatively signed the compact, and so, you know, the game mix was changing. And so we had nothing, like really nothing. The Gaming Commission was building, the tribe was building, we were, you know, the policies and regulations and all that, just kind of figuring out a way. And I'll never forget my coworker and I we kind of laughed at the time, and we were like, gosh, do you realize, like, these, you know, it was regulation that we were forming, and we would say, oh my gosh, this is kind of like law. This is tribal law. Like, we're creating tribal law. And we would sometimes giggle because we weren't sure if it was exactly, and we hadn't been in the industry for, you know, really a long time. So we weren't sure if it was going to work or if it was the right course. And so, you know, always had that mind frame of, well, if it doesn't work, you know, well, then just go back and change it and fix it. And so, you know, then kind of going back to the first story, it was a really interesting time because we were collaborating you know, with the government, with the United States, and having discussions on what federal regulations and laws should be for all the tribes to follow. And, you know, I have to say that there were some times and there were some parts that, I mean, you're in a room for a really long time and you're really hungry and you've been on the subject for about 12 hours and okay, it sounds good. You know, and you're not for certain that it's right. And so I think just drawing from that, you know, in short, is that anything that you do, you know, we don't know if it's right going with the future. I mean, we can just go and keep going. And if we make a mistake, we correct it and we just keep going. And the same thing is, you know, if you're going in a direction and you get off course, well, you just get back on the course and keep going.
Yeah. Great, great advice. Great stuff. Thanks a lot, Rich. Really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
Yep.
Thank you.
Mia, we have a whole bunch of callers, but we've run out of time. So we're definitely going to have to do another show sometime down the line. But thank you so much for coming on. It's been an incredible show. And like I said earlier, it's a very special moment in time with your accomplishment and what you've achieved with your tribe so far. And we wish you nothing but the best of luck.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I'm humbled to represent the Comanche Nation and, you know, again, have a great team. And, you know, it is all because of our team, what we've accomplished. So thank you.
Yeah. And there's going to be a lot of, great things coming up. I can feel it. If you're a positive energy, there's no looking back.
That's right. Forward.
Yes. Thanks so much for being on the show. You have a great evening.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
Okay. Good night. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
All right. What a wonderful woman. Actually Thursday, I have Bruce McClure as the GM of Sac and Fox. Great guy. Known for many years, got a lot of great stories. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. This is Tino Magnetta wishing you a great evening. I'll talk to you soon. Ciao.